If you would please open your Bibles to Ezekiel chapter 38, where we will begin at verse number 14 today. Now, I'm trying my best to convince all of you that chapters 38 and 39 is just the larger story of the book of Revelation chapter 22, when it talks about Satan being released from his 1,000 years of bondage, and then gathering the Gog Magog troublemakers at the end of the millennium to try to attack Jesus and his kingdom centered out of Jerusalem, and how God instantly puts that down. The chapters in Ezekiel have to be applied to a time when the land of Israel has been restored, with people coming back from all over the place to a land without war, to a land that doesn't bother with fences and walls and locks on doors, because there's peace and prosperity. And so there is no other time that we can expect that to be true in the future other than at the tail end of the millennium. And so I think and teach that these two chapters in Ezekiel are all about the fallout at the end of the millennial period, when Satan, whose code name in Ezekiel is Gog, that's just an old Babylonian word that means the shining one, and we know that definitely is applied to Satan in other places. He gathers people from the north of the millennial reign area, places that we would say are in Turkey and Armenia and Azerbaijan and in northern Iran, so places up to the north, and also places down to the south, such as places like Libya and Ethiopia and Yemen and Saudi Arabia around the cities of Mecca and Medina. There was a reference to the merchants of Tarshish, which would be those that are maybe trading in the waterways around the Mediterranean and around the area of the Arabian and Indian waters. So let's continue today with that thesis that this is about the tail end of the millennium and Satan's attempted overthrow of Jesus, and see where that takes us today. So Ezekiel 38, verse 14, "Therefore, son of man, prophesy and say to Gog," say to Satan, the shining one, "thus says he who is God, on that day when my people are dwelling securely, will you not know it? You will come from your place out of the uttermost parts of the north," and so that's where the bulk of these troublemakers are located, that Satan gets to join him in his attempted coup. "You and many peoples with you, all of them riding on horses, a great host, a mighty army, you will come up against my people Israel like a cloud covering the land." Now, in the book of Revelation, it's like the sand on the seashore. Similar description of how many people we've got involved in this. "In the latter days," so in the late days of the millennium we're talking about, "I will bring you against my land that the nations may know me, when through you, O Gog, I vindicate my holiness before their eyes." So God's just basically saying, fine, come on down. I'll just use you for one last illustration that I am whom I am. Verse 17. "Thus says he who is God, are you he of whom I spoke in former days by my servants, the prophets of Israel, who in those days prophesied for years that I would bring you against them?" So this is the culmination of the prophecy of the bad guys. Book of Revelation chapter 20, the Gog-Magog War, is the ultimate bad guy attempt to take God out, and it doesn't work. Verse 18, on that day, the day that Gog shall come against the land of Israel, declares he who is God, my wrath shall be roused in my anger. For in my jealousy and in my blazing wrath, I declare on that day there shall be a great earthquake in the land of Israel. This isn't mentioned in the book of Revelation, but there is this added feature that God will make the land shake. The fish of the sea, the birds of the heavens, the beasts of the field, all creeping things that creep on the ground, all the people who are on the face of the earth shall quake at my presence. So it's not just simply the land quaking, it'll be the living beings, the creatures and the people that will also be shaking because they're seeing all this happening. And the mountains shall be thrown down, the cliffs shall fall, every wall shall tumble to the ground. I will summon a sword against Gog on all my mountains, declares he who is God. Every man's sword shall be against his brother. And that's an interesting feature because we know that in many of the battles of the Old Testament, God made the enemy start attacking each other. So apparently that's going to be part of the Gog-Magog war fallout. Verse 22, with pestilence and bloodshed, I will enter into judgment with him, and I will rain upon him and his hordes and the many people who are with him, torrential rains and hailstones, fire and sulfur. Book of Revelation, we hear that fire comes down on those that are in the Gog-Magog war and devours them. So we've got the parallel here. Just a little bit more expansive, Old Testament-like information that apparently God will use rain and hail as part of his artillery strike against these troublemakers, not just simply fire from the sky, which might be lightning, by the way. Verse 23, so I will show my greatness and my holiness and make myself known in the eyes of many nations. Then they will know that I am he who is. So the righteous, resurrected, transformed saints, they will be watching all this happen. The mortals of the millennium, those that survived into the millennium and were being allowed time to make up their minds about their allegiance to Jesus, those that had pretty much come to that conclusion that Jesus was their Lord, they're going to be witnesses to this as well and will be impressed by it. Chapter number 39. You, son of man, prophesy against Gog, against the Shining One, and say, thus says he who is God, behold, I am against you, O Gog, chief prince of Meshech and Tubal. So the guy that's taking over these troublemaking armies in the north, up there in Turkey, Armenia, Azerbaijan, the area along the Black and Caspian Sea region. I will turn you about and drive you forward and bring you up from the uttermost parts of the north and lead you against the mountains of Israel. So God is going to arrange everything for this final confrontation, this final demonstration of who is really in charge. Verse 3, and I will strike your bow from your left hand, so disarming, and I will make your arrows drop from your right hand. You shall fall on the mountains of Israel, you and all your hordes and the people who are with you. I will give you to birds of prey of every sort and to the beasts of the field to be devoured. Very common after a battle. Scavenger animals take over in the cleanup. Now, I will make this note. Some people will be bothered by the idea that there will be so much death and destruction of life and property during the tail end of the millennium. There will also be this problem in some people's minds of, well, I thought that the animals in the millennium, we're all vegetarian. And that is true. there is every indication from the prophecies that every living creature will go back to the Genesis diet, which is vegetarian. This would be probably an exception to that as part of the cleanup of the battlefield, so that God has some of the birds going back to eating flesh and the animals going back to eating the flesh because they will be on cleanup detail. Verse number 5, "You shall fall in the open field, for I have spoken, declares he who is God. I will send fire on Magog and on those who dwell securely in the coastlands, and they shall know that I am he who is." So even those that kind of hold back and send these others ahead of them to attack Jerusalem and attack the throne of Jesus, the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, even the people that remain in the north will also come under the fire of God. Verse 7, "And my holy name I will make known in the midst of my people Israel, and I will not let my holy name be profaned anymore, and the nations shall know that I am he who is the Holy One of Israel. Behold, it's coming, and it will be brought about, declares he who is God. That is the day of which I have spoken. Then those who dwell in the cities of Israel will go out and make fires of the weapons and burn them, shields and bucklers, bow and arrows, clubs and spears, and they will make fires of them for 7 years. Now, before we delve too much more into this wrap-up of the story of Gog Magog being defeated, let's talk about the fact that when the millennium begins, we have prophecies that say that all man-made things will disappear with the coming of the new heaven and the new earth, that I make all things new, all the old things have passed away. Peter talks about how the earth and all its works will be burned up. It'll be passing away with this violent sound, and then it'll be replaced with the new heaven and new earth in which righteousness dwells. So where did all these weapons come from? Well, it seems as if at the end of the millennium, toward the end of the millennium, these troublemakers start making their own weapons out of whatever they have available. There's some other prophecies that mention taking agricultural equipment and repurposing them as war equipment, which is the reverse of the prophecies that deal with the coming of the millennium, which has people taking swords and making them into plowshares and pruning hooks and making them other weapons and spears, making them into pruning hooks. So what happens at the beginning of the millennium is apparently reversed at the end of the millennium by the troublemakers. Now, furthermore, let's ask, why are these troublemakers located where they're at? In the book of Zechariah, there is a prophecy that's the setting up for the millennium. Actually, why don't we go there? Instead of me just describing it off the top of my head, let's actually go and read the wording. Zechariah chapter number 14. The beginning of the chapter is all about the coming of Jesus, his standing upon the Mount of Olives, the Olives splitting, and him fighting in the day of the Lord against the troublemakers. And then eventually we have peace, and we have the river of the water of life that's flowing out of Jerusalem, and half of the water is going toward the Dead Sea and making it alive again, and the other half's going toward the Mediterranean, and you've got great prosperity. The earth itself changes, even the area around Jerusalem changes, so that it becomes the centerpiece of the millennial kingdom. Then we have a description of the Battle of Armageddon, verse number 13 of chapter 14 of Zechariah. On that day, a great panic from he who is shall fall on them, so that each will seize the hand of another, and the hand of one will be raised against the hand of the other. And so we got the judgment of God that ends with all those that took the mark of the beast dying. But what about those who didn't take the mark of the beast, but who also were not believers and therefore did not get transformed at the second coming of Jesus? They're mentioned starting in verse 16. Then everyone who survives of all the nations that had come against Jerusalem shall go up year after year to worship the king, he who is of the hosts, and to keep the Feast of Booths. So throughout the millennium, the mortals who are in between, those that have already been resurrected because they believe, and those that were killed because they took the mark of the beast, those mortals are given 1,000 years in which to make up their minds, are you or are you not going to worship Jesus as the King of Kings and Lord of Lords? And every year they will be expected to come to the Feast of Tabernacles at Jerusalem. Verse 17, if any of the families of the earth do not go up to Jerusalem to worship the king, he who is of the hosts, there will be no rain on them. If the family of Egypt, for example, does not go up and present themselves, then there will be no rain. Notice that apparently in the millennium, there'll be rain in Egypt, even though now there isn't. But if they don't bother to come to the Feast of Tabernacles to show their allegiance to Jesus, they get no rain. There will be a plague of which he who is afflicts the nations that don't go up to keep the Feast of Booths. This will be the punishment to Egypt and the punishment to all the nations that do not go up to keep the Feast of Booths. So the principle is, through the 1,000-year reign, if you don't show your allegiance as a mortal to Jesus at Jerusalem, the area where you're living gets the tap turned off. You get no more water. And it doesn't matter how perfect the land is. It's not going to grow crops for you if it doesn't have water. So my suspicion, and that's all it is, this is my speculation, folks, is that over time, the people who don't really want to have Jesus as their King of Kings, as their Lord of Lords, they're going to quit coming to Jerusalem and bowing the knee at all. And because of that, God's going to turn the water off in their home area, which means they're going to have to move to another place to try to grow some crops to live. And then the water will be turned off in that area, and they'll have to move to another place. And this is just going to keep happening over and over and over again. And what you're going to see over time is that they will gravitate farther and farther away from the area that Jesus controls as the highway of holiness. And guess where we see the people named, or the regions named in the book of Ezekiel, come from when they attack the capital city under Jesus? They come from fringe areas, north and south of the highway of holiness. And so that is exactly what I expect has happened, is that when Satan is released after the 1,000 years, he goes to the place of the north and says, hey, you guys, Jesus has treated you poorly. He keeps turning the tap off on you. You know what? He's not a good king, and his people are just troublemakers. And, you know, they've got all this stuff down there, and they really don't deserve it. Let's go get it. Let's go throw him off the throne and make all of this ours. And I think that will be the rallying cry that Satan uses to bring these people in arms against Jerusalem. And it's not going to do him any good, because as both the Ezekiel text says and the book of Revelation text says, fire is going to come out and destroy them. And there won't be anything left of their forces other than dead bodies and scattered weaponry. Well, the dead bodies are going to be scavenged, at least in part, by the animals. The scattered weaponry, since a lot of it is flammable, is just going to be turned into firewood. And there will be enough of it that it can last for 7 years as kindling. Verse number 10. So they will not need to take wood out of the field or cut down any out of the forest, for they will make their fires of the weapons. So if you want a campfire for a nice, relaxing group meeting with your fellow immortals, you don't have to cut down a tree or anything. Just use some of those weapons that were left by the Gog-Magog War. They will seize the spoil of those who despoiled them and plunder those who plundered them, declares he who is God. So the intention of Satan and his rebel forces was to plunder the kingdom of the millennium. But instead, the people of the kingdom of the millennium will be using or plundering the things of that attempted coup. So God boomerangs it. God turns it around. Verse 11, on that day, I will give to Gog a place for burial in Israel, the Valley of the Travelers east of the sea. Now, some people, I think, get a little confused by this east of the sea, and they make it east of the Dead Sea. I think it's a reference to east of the Mediterranean Sea, because the most natural order of march out of the region that we've seen these people coming from would be along the Mediterranean coast and then up toward Jerusalem from there. And so God says, well, you know what? I'm going to make a place for you guys to be buried during your invasion. And it's going to be east of the sea. It will block the travelers from there. Gog and all his multitude will be buried. It will be called the Valley of Hamon Gog, which is just multitude of Gog. So the bunches that belong to the Shining One. For 7 months, the house of Israel will be burying them in order to cleanse the land. So it'll take 7 months in order to gather up all the dead bodies, the scavenged bodies, and put them in this mass grave. All the people of the land will bury them, and it will bring them renown on the day that I show my glory, declares he who is God. They will set apart men to travel through the land regularly and bury those travelers remaining in the face of the land so as to cleanse it. So they'll have a burial detail, still looking for the scattered bodies. At the end of 7 months, they'll make their search. And when these travel through the land and anyone sees a human bone, then he shall set up a sign by it till the buriers have buried it in the Valley of Hamon Gog. Hamonah is also the name of that city. So, multitudes. And thus shall they cleanse the land. So a great big mass burial will take place for the troublemakers that try to bring down the kingdom of Jesus. Verse 17, as for you, son of man, thus says he who is God, speak to the birds of every sort and to all the beasts of the field. Assemble and come, gather for all around to the sacrificial feast that I'm preparing for you, a great sacrificial feast on the mountains of Israel. You shall eat flesh and drink blood. You shall eat the flesh of the mighty and drink the blood of the princes of the earth, of rams, of lambs and he-goats, of bulls, all of them fat beasts of Bashan. And you shall eat fat till you're filled and drink blood till you're drunk at the sacrificial feast that I'm preparing you. And you shall be filled at my table with horses and charioteers, with mighty men and all kinds of warriors, declares he who is God. And that's very poetic talk that is found in many places, not just simply in the Old Testament, but in non-Bible passages about the aftermath of war, that the scavenger birds come in and start clearing the field. And so God is, again, repeating this idea that there will be a lot of death and destruction that will fall on those that have got this idea in mind to put a stop to the kingdom of God himself. Verse 21, "And I will set my glory among the nations, and all the nations shall see my judgment that I've executed and my hand that I've laid on them. The house of Israel shall know that I am he who is their God from that day forward, and the nations shall know that the house of Israel went into captivity for their iniquity, because they dealt so treacherously with me that I hid my face from them and gave them into the hand of their adversaries, and they all fell by the sword. I dealt with them according to their uncleanness and their transgression and hid my face from them." So that's a reminder to the exilees that happened because of sin. But God can bring you back. Verse 25, "Therefore, thus says he who is God, now I will restore the fortunes of Jacob and have mercy on the whole house of Israel." That's both the northern kingdom, southern kingdom people. "And I will be jealous for my holy name. They shall forget their shame and all the treachery they've practiced against me when they dwell securely in their land with none to make them afraid." So that future state that we refer to as the millennium, that's what they could have, is free from fear. "When I brought them back from the peoples and gathered them from their enemies' lands, and through them have vindicated my holiness in the sight of many nations, then they shall know that I am he who is their God, because I sent them into exile among the nations and then assembled them into their own land." So one of the proofs is God judged them and sent them away, but also brought them back. "I will leave none of them remaining among the nations anymore." So everybody's coming back. That's definitely second coming of Jesus stuff. "And I will not hide my face anymore from them, and I will pour out my spirit upon the house of Israel, declares he who is God." So a great way to end up the study today. Come back tomorrow, and we will continue into the next part of our journey through God's inspired word.